I believe that we are moving out of the information economy and into an attention society. Used to be that everybody was very excited that someday we were going to have access to any information we wanted, any place, at almost any time, and well, we're there. And I really feel that where we're headed now is the attention society, where the limiting factor is everybody has 24 hours in a day. And who do you trust to bring thoughtful media to you?
Hey folks, welcome back to the First Crack Podcast. This is number 68 of the podcast of stuff you didn't know you wanted to know about. Today we're grabbing lunch with Dan Carroll from inradio.net. And before I forget, I'm Garrick Van Buren, your host. Who am I? Why am I here? Dan tells us about his media player and how it benefits artists, how it's different than iTunes. I ask him the business model question, all that stuff. He's coming out of Loring Park, and that's we grabbed lunch at Joe's Garage, and we had this nice little conversation. Before we get started on all that stuff, First Crack Podcast is a Working Pathways production. Head over to workingpathways.com, read the Work Better blog, read more of my rants on podcasting. And in some way, shape, or form, you receive this podcast from the firstcrackpodcast.com website. I'd like you to go back there. Go back there right after you listen to this. And leave a comment on the show. Rate this conversation in relation to all the others. And lastly, but not leastly, the First Crack Podcast theme music you're listening to in the background right now, generously provided by Jeremy Pillar. Thanks, Jeremy. All right, so before we dig into what the imp is, I want Dan to finish his thought on attention, because it's one of my favorite topics.
Is your system tracking which media that's distributed via it is actually played or listened to or those sorts of things?
Yes, we have a really large metadata collection server and database, and you can choose for us not to look at that stuff, and we'll certainly respect your wishes for us not to track what you're listening to or watching. But if you would like us to watch that stuff, we can provide you with a much better listening and viewing experience. So our recommendation engine sort of starts where Amazon has been and goes from there to try to introduce you to new media, both audio and video, that is related but yet stretches your interest as well. So as opposed to recommending similar artists that are exactly the same in sound, and there are a number of companies that are trying to do this right now, that actually replicate the same sounds for you to listen to. Our recommendation engine actually encourages you to listen to things that could be very, very different, but are in the realm of something that other people who are listening to your chosen artists would enjoy. Does that make sense?
And can I get a printout? Can I get a copy of what I'm listening to?
What you're listening to via a stream of music, or? Well, sure. I mean, yeah, absolutely. Yep, your playlist, your library, those kinds of things.
My attention.
Interesting. No, we don't actually have that right now. That the history of what you viewed and listened to. That's interesting. We'll certainly be. We could do it. So that's a good idea.
Now, with that out of the way, Dan, what does IMP stand for?
IMP really doesn't stand for anything. It used to stand for something. Originally, it was the intelligent media player. It is still intelligent. We're just going to keep, from a simplicity standpoint, we're just going to go out with IMP. So, keeps it simple. IMP is a digital media distribution platform that allows organizations to brand a software program, something kind of like an iTunes, if you can think of it that way, with their own brand, and send it out to their members or subscribers, users, and stay in contact with them through the distribution of big digital media files. So as an example, you'd have somebody like Utney Magazine, who does features of music and film and radio shows consistently in their bi-monthly publication. Our platform would enable them to actually share with their subscribers the audio and the video and, in fact, the digital publication version of the publication itself with their subscribers.
And you've been working on this for a while now, and you said this week it'll be out?
Actually, it's out now if you want to try the beta version. So your listeners can go to playimp.com and send us a little email, and we'll put them on the beta list.
Tell me about the background, the technologies around it.
It's running BitTorrent. And talk about some of the different challenges between tell me why you went with BitTorrent.
Sure. Speed, for the most part, as well as scalability. I went out when I started this programming for this. I'm not a programmer myself, but when I started building the program a year ago, I went out and found the best BitTorrent program I could find that was running in Java. And it happens to also be what is kind of considered the best BitTorrent program as well. It's called Azurius. And the programmers for Azurius, a number of the programmers in France and England, and actually one here in Minnesota, agreed to build the back-end stack, is what it's called, BitTorrent stack, for our program. So they started programming that not quite a year ago now. For those who don't know about BitTorrent, it essentially uses the little bits of bandwidth from lots of people's computers to deliver big media files very, very quickly. This will get used in two primary ways. The first is for organizations to connect with their members. So an alternative news weekly, a national publication, a college can make sure that their members are up to date on the most current message from the president of the college, or favorite band of the membership organization, or film that's being reviewed by the magazine itself. And the editors will actually be able to log into our software, drag and drop the media files that they are wanting to feature, and distribute those legally to their members. We provide access to very, very large databases of media that have all been pre-approved for rights so that they can legally promote musicians, introduce people to filmmakers, and so on and so forth. The second major thing there are only two major things that our program really does that I think are just absolutely critical today. And the second of those things is what we call our tracker. And our tracker actually creates a link between filmmakers and their fans, or between musicians and their fans, so that once you've been discovered or introduced to a new audience, that audience can then draw a connection with you, an RSS connection in technical terms, with you, that will provide them with anything you want them to see for free. They would just automatically get and download. And anything that you have for sale, they would also see at the prices and rights that you've set. And then whenever anything new comes along that you want to put out into the world, if it's free, they get it automatically. And if it's for sale, they'll see that it's available.
For 99 cents or whatever price.
At whatever price they want it to be. Literally starting at a penny.
And the artist gets that penny?
The artist gets between 75 and 80% of everything that they sell, depending on how expensive it is. Actually, if the artist wanted something to be $99, theoretically they would get a whole lot more of the percentage, but we think that most of the media that's going to be sold will probably be likely somewhere between a quarter and $1.50, something like that.
What's the database, what's the library look like?
Massive and getting getting bigger and multiple databases. So the first major database that we're integrating is the SnowCap database, which is a database developed by Sean Fanning, the guy that started Napster. They've done a wonderful job at building an extensive database that includes all the majors, most of the indies, and now is available for unsigned artists. For them to set the prices and rights for their music. We're in negotiations, so I don't want to say too much, but for a film database as well as an audiobook database. So those are coming soon.
We talked about this briefly ahead of time, but if I have the Utney player, do I need the Onion player to hear the stuff that Onion wants to send me?
Right, that's a great question. No, actually, part of the reason that this platform will work is because each of the organizations that's a part of it helps feed the other organizations that are a part of it. So an Onion media player would also feature the taster, as we're calling it, from the Utney. So you could try out media from different organizations. So if you downloaded the Utney media player, you would from time to time get announcements about new tasters that would be available for you, including things like the Onion or others. I've started with organizations that I know well and that I know the leadership of well. And certainly they've helped develop and make this product better. So as we reach out further, beginning now actually, we plan to take in as many publications as quickly as possible and to really build out a large network of organizations and publications that take advantage of it.
How big does an organization need to be for this to make sense?
50,000 members, users is usually about what we look at for a bottom end number. It can be smaller than that if it's a college or something where the membership is really, really interested in in maintaining that connection. But for publications, that's generally the bottom end, and the top end is gigantic.
The threshold that 50,000
reach
tips over?
Why is that the minimum? Generally, it's not that it wouldn't work for an organization that was smaller than that, but for us to actually take the time to program the look and feel of the player to be your organization's look and feel, it needs to be a big enough audience. And that's a fairly small audience compared to...
I live in audiences of 1,000, you know, and I know of audiences of, you know, hundreds of dozens of audiences of 1,000. So I've just, you know, that to me is a huge jump. So the organizations are paying you and are they getting a cut of the revenue that gets sold, the media that gets sold?
What's the business model, basically? Right. Sure. Yeah, they get a tiny little piece, so they're incentivized, but they get a small, very small piece. The artist gets the lion's share of the media that's sold. There will be advertising on some portions of the player, so there's another revenue model, and there's some subscription fees that can be paid. So if a college... we're negotiating with a couple colleges, and they're interested in selling the media taster that they would provide. So your college might say, for $20, here's a sample of what you can see, and for $20 a year, you can find out about all the new bands on campus, find out the cool films that are being created, and just know what's going on campus. And they would keep a large portion of that $20, and we would keep some.
You're so modest.
You got to make money somehow for it to grow, right?
So that to me, so I'm comparing this in my head against, you know, comparing the in player against something like the existing podcast receivers. Sure. And the difference in between these two is?
Well, we will actually have a podcast receiver as a portion of this. So it has that element of it. The real difference is that we are able to connect the organizations and their fans directly, and the artists and their fans directly. So as opposed to iTunes or Yahoo Music being a conduit for you to pay whatever they're asking to receive whatever you can search for, we are providing a way for you to come into direct contact with the artists and organizations that you choose and pay the prices that they choose to participate. So we're also not, we don't really view ourselves in direct competitions with those other players. Our system is built on a principle of openness. So if you want to transfer music or other media to your other player, that's absolutely fine with us. We're not intending to go head-to-head with iTunes. I think they spent something like $1.2 billion in marketing last year, and, well, we don't have $1.2 billion, and we wouldn't spend it that way anyways.
The difference is between your catalog and the iTunes catalog is, I would suspect there's probably very, very little overlap.
Actually, there's quite a bit of overlap. There is... we're seeking to have every major label artist and track. They certainly have most major label artists and tracks. They have a fair amount of large indie labels. We'll have those indie labels. Where their catalog leaves off and ours keeps going is with truly unsigned, you know, for those familiar with it, down the long tail artists. We provide a way to not only get access to sell your digital music, but also to control the prices and rights for that digital music.
That'll do it. That's Dan Carroll. That was lunch. Thanks for spending this part of your day with me and with Dan and with our lunch with the First Crack Podcast. Tell me what you think. firstcrack@gmail.com or over leave a comment firstcrackpodcast.com. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.